whose image is in you. There was a church where a preacher and the director of music or minister of music were not getting along. And as time went along, this hostility began to spill over into the church service, with the minister of music making life extremely difficult for the preacher. One week, the minister preached on the subject of commitment and how we should dedicate ourselves to God. The music director led the final hymn in response to the message, "I shall not be moved." The next week, the preacher preached on tithing and how we should gladly give to the work of the Lord. The music director led the final hymn, "Jesus paid it all." The next week, the minister preached on the evils of gossiping and how we should all watch our tongues, to which the music director led in response, "I love to tell the story." With all this going on, the preacher became totally disgusted over the situation. And the following Sunday, he got up and he told his congregation that he was considering resigning, to which the music director then led the hymn, "Oh, Why Not Tonight?" And as it came to pass, the preacher did finally resign, had enough. The next week, he informed the church that it was Jesus who had led him there, and it was Jesus who was taking him away, to which the music director led the congregation in, "What a friend we have in Jesus." I love that story. One of the phrases that's been bandied about every time we have an election, federal, provincial, whatever, is the phrase "hidden agenda." I take this phrase "hidden agenda" used in recent elections to mean that people believe that one or maybe all the political leaders and their parties tell the public one thing, but secretly have other plans they would carry out if they were elected, a hidden agenda. These secret plans, it seems, are by definition such that they would be received negatively if the voting public knew about these secret plans in advance. The problem with hidden agendas is that, well, they're hidden, if they exist at all. Sometimes we can tell someone what someone's hidden agenda is, like that music director in the little story with the minister. But other times we're not so sure what their agenda is. It's also very difficult, if you remember. Remember former Prime Minister Stephen Harper, he had to somehow prove to the nation that he didn't have a hidden agenda. How do you prove something doesn't exist? How do you prove you don't have a hidden agenda? The truth is, however, that people do, by their own human nature, have hidden agendas. All of us do. In most of our encounters with each other, even in the church, we all secretly want to achieve something of benefit to ourselves or those we represent. There is in most of our human interactions a seething undercurrent of suspicion and even hostility, because we assume that we're not being given the whole story, that we're being sold a bill of goods. Have you heard that before? People will do almost anything, even cheat, for some sort of personal gain. And who cheats, you wonder? Well, just about everyone, if the stakes are right. Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner, who are the authors of that wonderful series, Freakonomics, writes this. You might say to yourself, "I don't cheat, regardless of the stakes." And then you remember the time you cheated, say in a board game or in a golf game when you just nudged the ball out of a bad lie on the course, or the time you really wanted a bagel at the office break room but couldn't come up with the dollar that you were supposed to drop in the coffee can. So you took the bagel anyway and you told yourself, "I'll pay double the next time," but you never did. Some cheating barely leaves a shadow of evidence. In other cases, the evidence is massive. Guess what happened in 1987? In 1987, 7 million American children disappeared. Did you know that? What happened? Was it some terrible plague? Was it a natural disaster? Well, actually, it happened simply when the IRS made a change in the rules about how dependent children are to be claimed on one's income taxes. Children who are being claimed in the U.S. as dependents now had to have a social security number. So guess what? Overnight, 7 million phantom children disappeared as dependents on taxes. So we all have hidden agendas, you and I. We manage it by cheating and lying and flattery and a whole host of other tools. So when I read the story today of Jesus being questioned by his critics, I may be disappointed, but I'm not surprised. The Pharisees had been scheming for months to get rid of Jesus. And they believed that finally they had an ingenious plan. At least they thought so. Sending their disciples, they didn't even go themselves, along with some Herodians. You might think, well, who are these Herodians? Well, Herodians were people who were monarchists. They wanted to keep King Herod on the throne. These people came to try and trap Jesus. And first of all, they used a typical strategy that all of us have experienced. They try and flatter Jesus by stating how honest he is and how smart he is, that he speaks the truth regardless of the fallout. I'm sure we've all had someone approach us like that, haven't we? Try and butter us all up to get something. Like, gee, mummy, you look pretty today. And by the way, pretty mummy, can I have a cookie? These Pharisee wannabes are hypocrites. They are being two-faced. They neither think Jesus is any kind of teacher worthy of their respect, nor do they seek any answer of any value from him. They are seeking to trap him. So they ask their very slippery question. Is it right to pay taxes to the Roman government or not? If Jesus said that it was right, not right to pay taxes, the Herodians would go back to their people and report that Jesus, or report Jesus to the Romans as being a subversive or a zealot. If Jesus said that it was lawful to pay your taxes, then the people who hated the Romans would turn against Jesus for being in compliance with their occupiers. It was a trap. We read further that Jesus saw through this trick, and he answered by taking the coin and uttering his famous response, "Whose picture is on this coin?" It was Caesar's, of course. And then Jesus goes on to say that people should give to Caesar what belongs to him, but everything that belongs to God must be given to God. The scriptures tell us that the Pharisees' disciples and the Herodians were amazed at his reply, and they went away defeated. They went away because their hidden agenda had failed. Now, one thing about this passage that has bothered me for some time is how we use it in the modern church. I'm sure that all of us who have been a part of the church for any length of time have heard sermons on this passage that speak of the rightful relationship between secular government and religion. In other words, some people try to use this passage to say that Jesus was making a political statement. Perhaps you even thought this passage has something to say about the rightfulness of Christians paying taxes to the government. I, however, see this passage as speaking about something entirely different, at least as I come to it this time. Regardless of the financial implications of this passage, I think it has more to say about our own hidden agendas than taxation. Jesus used the word hypocrite here to describe the hearts of those who question him. I also think that an appropriate word to describe their hearts is disingenuous, meaning insincere or lacking frankness. Both disingenuous and hypocrisy speak to the human trait of being two-faced. We all know what that means, don't we? Clearly it means that we are saying one thing, but we really believe or we feel differently. Jesus was clearly offended by his critics' disingenuous words and their hearts. The issue here isn't about taxes. It's not about coins. It's about the condition of our hearts. All of us have been frustrated by disingenuous people. We've all experienced people expressing thoughts or feelings that we know are more show than substance. Regularly, when we know somebody or meet somebody, what do we say to them? How are you doing? What do they normally say? I'm okay. When all you have to do is look at their face and their eyes, their body language, and you know they're not okay. What is a very curious development in our society, I think, is that when someone is frank and honest with us, we'd actually wish they'd go back to being disingenuous. We'd rather they'd lie to us. Comedian Don Rickles, he died not that long ago. Remember him? He was known as the King of Put-Downs. One time in Las Vegas, people were coming to his show, not only to see him, but to become part of his routine, because he would pick people out of the crowd and insult them. This one particular evening, Rickles was about 30 minutes into his act when a man and woman were escorted right down to the front row. Rickles stopped and acknowledged the couple's entrance with this following phrase, "Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Hockey Puck, you're 30 minutes late." But the man immediately shot back and said, "No, we're early, you're still on." The report says that Rickles literally dropped to his knees, laughing so hard, and the crowd gave the man a standing ovation. Frankness may be funny, but still, hypocrisy reigns in our world. The hidden agenda in our hearts always trumps what is good, right, and true. I think that perhaps we have been just as disingenuous with Jesus as these critics were. Perhaps we too approach him with a great deal of flattery, while all the while questioning his goodness. Perhaps we've offered lip service to the principles of faith that Christ espoused, only to go about secretly behaving as if Jesus has never made any difference in our lives at all. Perhaps we have been like those in the story today, gone to great lengths to phrase tricky excuses about why we don't believe in God or fully commit to following Jesus. I confess that every time I hear a skeptic dragging out century-old issues that they believe question the goodness of God or question God's existence, I know for the most part it is disingenuous. It is disingenuous because they don't really want an answer, but rather they want an excuse to avoid confronting their own lostness in their own lives. That's the true hidden agenda in this passage. And in our lives, our desire to avoid or distance ourselves from Jesus. We need to ask ourselves a very hard question today, you and I. Am I preserving an authentic relationship with Christ or simply preserving the appearance of a relationship? I'm sure you would agree with me that there's a world of difference. Tony Campolo, I love his stories. He tells a story about a church service at a charismatic church where a woman in the middle of the service got up and she kind of behaved like she was in some kind of spiritual trance. And she claimed that she had a word of prophecy. She stood in that trance-like state and then she spoke in an unnatural, heavy voice. And this is what came out of her. "Thus saith the Lord, even as Moses led the animals into the ark, even so shall I lead my people to safety if they trust me." Did you catch the problem? All through the congregation, people were leaning over to one another going, "Did she say Moses? I think she said Moses." After delivering what she thought was a direct message from the Lord, the woman sat down. Then a couple of minutes later, she stood back up. And again, supposedly in a trance, she belted out, "Thus saith the Lord, it wasn't Moses, it was Noah." And the whole place erupted just like you did with giggles. So I wonder, what is she giving evidence to? None of us but the Lord himself knows this woman's heart, but to the casual observer, we instinctively know there's something amiss there. I've thought about a certain question for a long time. What exactly does God want from his people? I hope it's a question you've asked yourself frequently too. Quite often the extent of my spiritual introspection centers on what I need to do in a particular moment or in the face of a particular set of circumstances. We've seen a whole industry grow up around the question, what would Jesus do? And so people took to wearing t-shirts and bracelets. They got all kinds of bumper stickers with WWJD emblazoned on them. In the hopes of somehow being reminded and reminding others that their first duty to Jesus is to do what he did. Now, certainly no one wants to be discouraged from following Jesus' example, but that's not what I'm getting at. But if the sum total of our faith is nothing but simply doing Christ-like things, we are disingenuous. To me, it's just as disingenuous to say, Jesus, look what I've done, as it was to flatter him, to try and trap him with a tricky question. I think that Jesus is looking for an authentic relationship with his followers. Followers who don't resort to trying to manipulate Jesus into liking them. Rather, followers who live with the assurance of Jesus' love. Jesus wants followers who are honest with them about their faults and their struggles and their doubts, and yet continue on the faith journey anyway. There's no hidden agenda with Jesus. Never has been. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And he will always tell you the truth about yourself. He will always tell you the truth about this world. He refuses to play politics with faith by trying to flatter you into the kingdom or by making the way to life wide, because it states in the scriptures it is narrow. And because Jesus is so forthright in his actions and his words, and because he refuses to play politics, he was eventually executed, wasn't he? Truthful faith is costly faith. Centuries of church history have proven that to be true. But being disingenuous or hypocritical in one's faith can be even costlier, as we run the danger of having Christ say to us, "Depart from me, I never knew you." And to be honest, I would far rather be known by Christ than anything or anyone else in this world.